RRI, Public Radio International.
Welcome to Dialogue, a program that explores the world of ideas and issues in national and international affairs, history, and culture. I'm George Liston C.A.
There is a vision of Russia that is eternal, rooted in her majestic architecture and set within the pristine beauty of her remotest regions. In wood and stone, Russia built homes, monasteries, and churches in these far-off lands that today stand as monuments to the Slavic soul of the country. To visit these sites or see them artfully photographed is to understand the weight of 1,000 years of Russian history as a presence that must be honored even as Russia continues her difficult transformation in a new political age. My guest is William Brumfield, professor of Slavic studies at Tulane University. William Brumfield, welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
How important is it for a person to seek to understand Russian architecture as a way of understanding Russian history? What's the vital connection?
Well, in many cases, architecture, particularly during the medieval period, when Russia produced its most spectacular monuments, for example, the one everyone knows, St. Basil's on Red Square, in many cases, the architectural monuments are our clearest record of what that culture produced. Because of the frequent upheavals and invasions, documents have often been lost or simply unrecorded. And therefore, architecture stands as a mute but eloquent in its own way witness to what the Russians have achieved, as you so rightly put it, over 1,000 years. And we can trace that from what's been left. The riddle is often who built it,
right,
and when it was built. There are many things we don't know about these magnificent churches, and we always wish that we knew more.
Right.
But what we have is clear evidence of a continuity, a culture that is more complex and deeper than we often realize.
You know, let's examine some of that complexity, because even to a layperson like myself, it is absolutely fascinating. And even if one doesn't grasp the deeper meaning, the sheer beauty of much of this architecture is gripping. One thing, William Brumfield, that I was immediately impressed by just looking at some of the many photographs that you have taken and published in your many books on the subject is how much of it seems to be faith-related. That is to say, given to churches, to monasteries, to chapels, even on the great estates, some of the chapels. And so I guess that's another question. I mean, what is the influence, particularly of Christianity, in the development of Russian architecture?
Well, it's enormous. The Russians accepted, or the Eastern Slavs accepted Orthodox Christianity officially in 988 with the baptism of Prince Vladimir of Kiev. Mm-hmm. Of course, that region, vast region in Eastern Europe, later defined related but differing cultures such as Ukrainian, Belarusian, and Russian itself. But in the early stages, Byzantine culture played an enormous role in defining these people's view of themselves and of the other world, in painting, in a chant, in architecture, in religious sermons and texts. This was a very complex culture that was brought from Byzantium and took root and developed, flourished indeed, in the enormous territory that extended to the north and east of the Black Sea. So that for Russians, this is indeed a defining moment. Now, there have always been arguments, when did secular culture enter Russia? Did Russia miss the Renaissance? And in certain respects, geography and history conspired to isolate Russia from developments elsewhere in Europe. These are some of the eternal questions we deal with in Russia culture. But the church obviously played an enormous role. You also have to take into practical considerations the fact that what we see now in architecture is almost entirely church-related, because Most people in the territory, particularly in the northern regions, prefer to build houses out of wood.
Exactly.
And wood is not, under ordinary circumstances, a material that lasts much longer than a few decades. Stone is another matter. So that the churches from the 11th and 12th centuries, few though they may be, have stood, nothing else remains.
Yeah.
So we often see an isolated, soaring stone structure and nothing around it. Well, at one time there was flourishing life around that structure.
That's right.
But time has effaced what was created for most people at that period and left the eternal.
Well, you know, the wood architectures also, the surviving examples are extraordinary, aren't they?
Yes, and I've been photographing much of that in the Russian north recently, and I've found that the farther I get from the main roads, the more fascinating that gets. In many cases, villages almost abandoned, but you can still see these great houses, these log houses, that they built for themselves at the end of the last century. And how much longer they're going to be there, I don't know. The Russian countryside has come under such assaults in this century. The North still remains a region in crisis, and yet the way the people there endure, the way they take pride in their culture is, for me, one of the most heartening things I've seen in 30 years of work in Russia.
Well, I'm very glad we focused now on the North in particular, because you are recently just back and you're frequently there in pursuit of scholarship and photography and publishing. I'd like for you to give us a sense of that region historically, William Brumfield. Mm-hmm. It, as you point out, it is a repository of what architectural wealth remains of this traditional sort. But historically, who went there? Who settled the North? What did the Northern Territories mean to Russia?
Well, at one point, particularly from the, I would say, 12th century until the founding of St. Petersburg, the North was one of the richest areas, most vital areas in the Russian state, however one configures it. And the boundaries shift frequently, but the importance of the North remained. Now, it's a very severe region, but it's also a region of great wealth. Vast forests and forest products and the game and wildlife within those forests. It also was a major source of salt, particularly in the area around the White Sea. There are salt springs and salt lakes, and we often forget for the medieval period how important salt was as an economy, perhaps the essential commodity, the way oil is today, if I can make a rough analogy. And so that there were pioneers who explored this area from the medieval city of Novgorod first, and then Muscovite princes became interested. And with the rise of Muscovy in the 15th century, of Moscow as the organizing force in Russian history, that route to the White Sea through a series of rivers and lakes became Russia's outlet to the West.
Really?
To Holland, to England in the 16th century during the reign of Ivan the Terrible. And yet, paradoxically, it was also a place of a refuge, first for monastic pioneers who went north to flee the temptations and vanities of Moscow court life, and found the great monasteries of the Russian north, Ferapontov Monastery, St. Cyril-Belozersk Monastery, and most notably the monastery on Solovetsky Island, later known as by the infamous Gulag camp that Solzhenitsyn wrote about, Solovki. But these monasteries were not only places of learning and spiritual retreat, they also served as outposts of Russian colonization throughout a territory, which I might add, to put it in perspective, is as large as the entire territory of Western Europe.
Extraordinary. That one territory.
Yes, yes. North from Moscow to the White Sea. The area that we would today call Arkhangelsk province and Vologda province, put together, they are equal in size to Western Europe.
That's right. That's right. And we're going to take an even closer look at it, and particularly at Arkhangelsk province and very particularly at the town of Kargopol.
Yes.
Before we do that, though, let me take a moment from our conversation just to say that this is Dialogue, a presentation of the Woodrow Wilson Center. I'm George Liston, CA, and my guest is William Brumfield, professor of Slavic studies at Tulane University. Well, William Brumfield, let's go directly through the power of imagination and in your narrative to Arkhangelsk province, which is a key province, as I understand it, in the Northern Territories.
Yes.
And the town of Kargopol is set within Arkhangelsk. Is this correct?
Yes, that's correct. There's one main rail line that runs north-south. It runs from Moscow through Yaroslavl to Vologda and then directly north like an arrow.